Hey everyone, before we begin this week's episode of Does Not Compute, I want to tell you a little bit about our sponsor, which is Datadog. So Datadog is a SaaS monitoring analytics platform that provides developers and DevOps teams with a unified view of their infrastructure metrics, distributed application traces, and logs all in one platform. It's not just a log collection service, it actually monitors your application's performance from end to end, front end to back end to your database and application and everything else in between. So it lets you take a deep dive into the individual traces that touch every part of your application. Their Application Performance Monitoring feature, or APM, lets you identify, analyze, and resolve performance issues all the way down to the code level for applications that are Python, Ruby, Go, Java, and Node.js. Out of the box, it even automatically detects and alerts you of anomalous performance behaviors, and you don't even have to configure that, it just does that for you. And sometimes if you just need to dig into a plain old log file, there's also the Log Explorer, which has real-time log search and analytics built right in. So it's really easy to get started. There's over 250 turnkey integrations for AWS, Nginx, Kubernetes, Slack, and just so much more. Installing the Datadog client is super simple too. It's literally just a one-line command that you run on your server. I've done it and it works like they say. So Datadog is offering DNC listeners a free trial, and as an added bonus for signing up and creating a dashboard, they'll even send you a free Datadog t-shirt. You can start your free trial today at datadog.com/doesnotcompute, and they will send you a free t-shirt. Again, that's datadog.com/doesnotcompute.
I'm just on a warpath today, just wanting to punch stuff. Have you ever had those days?
Yeah. Sometimes punching stuff can help, actually. You actually punch stuff, though.
Well, I don't.
Like, for fun.
I don't throw strikes. I try to catch them if someone throws them at me. Bending and twisting is more so what jiu-jitsu is all about, but...
Oh, see, I know literally nothing about what you do.
I don't do any punching. I don't do the instigating. Yeah, I can't remember what set it off. Oh, yeah, so I alluded to this big feature that I'm working on last week, and it's shipping this weekend, officially. This weekend because, not because I'm promoting working on the weekend, but because we don't have...
Because you love to ship code in your off time.
Right. Always be shipping or whatever. I don't know what the mantra is. But no, it's really just because if I have to like keep maintenance someone on for a while, I don't want to have to interfere. So when I'm on the East Coast, so when I'm done working, my West Coast coworkers, they're all working. They're all in the middle of things. And then when they're done working, the India team is usually rolling around a few hours after them. So if something does happen, hopefully nothing does, but something does happen, and I have to keep things down for a little bit, I want to make sure that I'm not hindering anyone's ability to work or be productive. So
sure.
Yeah, not so much. I'm not so much worried about customer-facing traffic. It's more so... I know that our India team has a lot on their plate, and so, yeah, I would rather not be like, oh, sorry, you know. Well, I guess it's the weekend, yeah. So if I were to do it, like, I thought about it on a Friday night, but that's not a good idea. So just doing it over the weekend.
Okay.
But back to my main point was, I don't want to, it's like rat's nest isn't the right word for it. There's just a lot of, like, branches of logic that could happen because of... how our stuff is set up. So like subscription stuff is tied to a company, but actual subscription items or line items on a subscription are tied to stores.
So back up a little bit. So give me like the high level, because now that you're actually shipping it, like where did you start and where are you at now? And like, how did you get there? Let's just start with that, because it's kind of been a while since we talked about this.
Yeah, I don't even remember if I've gone into the specifics of how it's set up, but
yeah.
So before it was, is really our setup was like a person would own a store and they would sign up, and that's their store. And then we added, so like way back when there wasn't even like a monthly subscription for stores, it was just commission on purchases. And what we found out, I thought this was really interesting, but what we found out was if people aren't paying money, then they're just not inclined to do any of the work they need to do. And by people, I mean our customers, because for them to actually be successful on our platform, they also have to be doing some work. So they have to be marketing themselves. It's like a give and take, right? We provide tools to help them do something, but they actually have to use the tools. And so if they're not paying for it, then we found that just a lot of people weren't doing anything.
Yeah, they're not motivated.
Yeah, they're not motivated. So, and what's also really interesting is we had some feedback and people were like, oh, this is too cheap. It's like too good to be true. And I don't trust it because it's too cheap. So we're like, all right, well, if you pay us money, how about that? And they're like, that sounds great. So we started charging money. So yeah, we added in a subscription setup with Stripe because we were already using Stripe Connect for everything. So so we set up subscriptions. And at that point, again, we didn't really have any stores because we're focusing on smaller kind of brick and mortar. We didn't have any stores that had like more than one location that they wanted to be on the platform at one time. So it really wasn't a concern. Sure, like at that point, I was like, well, I bet this probably will be a thing, but it didn't make sense for me to spend a bunch of time at that point to like set up this really flexible system for subscriptions in multiple stores and stuff. So really what we needed was we just needed to do it quickly so that way we could get some money coming in.
Sure.
So yeah, so basically subscriptions were tied to the stores themselves. So when you sign up, you create a store, you select a subscription, we save Stripe subscription ID and the plan ID on the store row. So that way it's easy for us to look things up and we can do, you know, we can turn features on or off based off of the plan ID that way. It's pretty simple.
And so at this point, did you have any people with multiple stores with multiple accounts or is that?
No.
No one is doing that. Okay, I'm just wondering.
Even now, we don't really. It's just that we've talked to a few stores that have like three or four locations, and we don't really want to, we don't want like chains on the platform. It's just that like stores that, these stores that have a few locations, they're still like pretty small brick and mortar locations. It's not like a chain setup. It's still a person that just has a few locations.
Yeah, and chains are going to have the resources to have those tools in place for them already. So you're kind of filling the gap in for those other guys.
You'd be surprised though that when we talk to people, I'm learning a lot about how the industry is as a whole, the furniture industry. But yeah, so fast forward, it's been like 9 or 10 months, almost a year, you know? So in that year we've shipped so many other things that were more important than what I got to now. And the reason I'm doing this multi-store setup now is because now is the time where we need it. So that's what I'm doing it. And it's funny because about a few months ago, I found some articles. I was reading some articles, or they were circulating on Twitter. I think that's how I found them. But people were like, oh, you should never set up your user account in a certain way. And I was looking at it and I was like, yeah, okay. If you need, it's like this weird thing. Like there's all this advice going around like, hey, you got to ship now and you have to get things out the door. But then there's all this counter advice saying like, you have to like never have like your, a user have like, they split up the idea of a user as like login credentials and like profiles and stuff. And then they split it out, like billing is separate. So you have like three or four tables that turn into things. So I just thought that was an interesting anecdote that there's like all this counter information or like counter pressure getting pushed on people. I don't know.
Yeah, we did that back in my old Cold Fusion days, old summer job. And yeah, one of the applications that I worked on had two separate tables, one for, you know, it was just called logins, I think, or credentials. I think it was just called logins. And it was just like, you know, username, password hashes or whatever. And then a user ID, right? Or account ID or something. And then the account was the actual, you know, represented the user like a profile, like you said. That was, seemed at the time it seemed like overkill. But when you think about, especially when you're thinking in terms of like Phoenix and contexts and where the boundaries are, like, authentication credentials really are not necessarily tied to, like, credentials can apply to many things, and profiles, user profiles can apply to many things. They're not necessarily like the same thing. So
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, moving fast and just having a giant, you know, user god model, that is fine up to a point, you know, but yeah, I don't know. It really depends on the needs of your application. Turns out just like anything else. So
yeah, I think the Phoenix guides even talk about that was like their example, right? For context, when they're first introducing that idea was the idea of having an account's namespace on tables. So accounts, users, accounts, passwords, accounts, whatever, accounts, credentials or something like that. But yeah, so it's I don't know, it's interesting to look at that because or rather it's interesting to think about that distinction because I've been able to do a lot of stuff and I guess I could have sunk all that time up front to do that last year. But again, we were in a position where we just needed subscriptions to roll out so we could have money coming in. I think that was the most important thing, but
yeah, it's kind of like what you said before, that thing where like every application evolves until it has chat,
Yeah.
Right. So like every, you could also say the same thing about this login thing. Like every application eventually becomes sufficiently complex to, you know, suddenly need this separation of concerns for a user model. Like you got to split that apart at some point.
Yeah. And that's kind of what so that's what I've sort of been working on. So up until that point we had, like I said, the Stripe IDs stored on the store row. And so basically this update introduces the idea of a company. And so a company can have many stores, a store belongs to a single company. And before we had, like a store didn't belong to a user, we have a table of store managers. So a store belongs to a user through store managers. It's just a join or pivot table. And now we also have company managers. So now we're like pretty set up so that way we can grow how we need and we can do like granular permissions and stuff. So a company can have 10 employees, two can access this store, two can access that store. So it's pretty granular. And so that's really what I've been doing. And so in that transition, I also have to kind of move Stripe stuff around. So we want a company to be billed once. And that means that subscription stuff has to live on a company. So it has to move off of the store. But then how the billing is set up, it makes things a little bit tricky because Stripe has these things called subscription items. And a subscription item obviously belongs to a subscription and it has a plan ID, but you can't have more than one subscription item belonging to a subscription with the same plan ID, if that makes sense.
Okay. You just have to have, you can't have like two things with quantity one. You have to have one thing with quantity
exactly.
two.
Okay. Exactly. Which makes total sense. But with it doesn't like map one to one for us. So and logically, I mean, so like if you could, it would be real simple. You know, like adding a store, you just create a new subscription item regardless of the plan.
Got it.
Removing a store, you would remove a subscription item regardless of the plan. So I have to have this extra layer of logic. So when you add a subscription item, I have to look to see, does this plan already exist on the subscription? If it does, tick the quantity. If it doesn't, create a new one. And then if you're like upgrading or downgrading, we have to run that through again, check that stuff and then modify the quantities accordingly. And then also if you only have one store, you can't just remove a subscription item from subscription because subscriptions have to have at least one subscription item. So if you're canceling your last store, technically you're canceling your subscription, which happens on a company. So there's like this whole layer of data massaging that happens and data checking, and it's not super straightforward. Like conceptually right now it is, but it gets a little in the weeds. So that's what I've been doing is I wrote the solution for all this stuff and then I rewrote it again. And yeah, so today I just was writing a bunch of tests and changing tests around, and tomorrow I'm going to be doing the same in click testing, and Friday I'm going to be doing the same in click testing, and then this weekend
ship it.
Hopefully things will be shipped. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. The scary part for me is really just kind of like moving the data around. And so like I guess like the silver lining is that at the very worst a company, so let me step back before. Since before we didn't have subscriptions, not every store currently on our platform has a subscription in Stripe. And so there's like a number of stores on our platform, say like 20 or so, they're kind of grandfathered into that actually don't pay monthly because they didn't when they signed up. So we didn't want to say like, surprise, you know. So we can upsell them later if they want additional features, but right now they might not have a subscription ID. So part of the migration is I have to actually go through, and we have a free plan. And so I have to go through and update all those stores and add a subscription and subscribe them to the free plan and do all that stuff. So the silver lining is that in all of these data changes, there's not actually like nothing could happen where a mistake happens and someone is charged money when they shouldn't have been. Like that's not a thing that could happen in this migration. And I'm very, very happy that's the case.
Sure.
But yeah, that's really the most nerve-wracking thing about this is it's not like all self-contained data. It's having to sync things between Stripe and our database. And yeah, it's just a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, it's stressful and it's really hard to test too. And I know, like you said, you've been writing lots of tests and and using what's it called, Bypass?
Yep.
To do that. And you showed me some of these tests in chat today and it looks great. You just got to have a lot of them, I guess. What's your total test count up to now, dare I ask, with the external flag?
600 or something. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it's getting there. There's need a lot of work. And that's something that I was thinking about yesterday too. I was just kind of like rattling off stuff at Paul as we do in our Discord. And so to back up a little bit, Bypass has been awesome. And at first I was like, I don't really, this feels weird to kind of be testing in this way. And I'll explain what I mean in a second. But now I'm starting to feel more and more benefit from it. So what makes it tough is like, again, like I said, we have our data and we have to store what we need. And then we also, like, that has to stay in sync with what's in Stripe. So if someone cancels a subscription, our database needs to reflect that that was canceled. But, you know, Stripe's going to reflect that too. And they have to stay in sync. And what I ended up doing was, and this is what I alluded to at the end of last week, was I made my own kind of Stripe API client. And I called it DK Stripe because there are a few places we're still using the Stripeity Stripe package. And we were on version 1 and we can't upgrade to version 2, which is a little bit more consistent. So I was like, I'm just going to make my own using HTTP Poison, because HTTP Poison makes it really easy to kind of overload their base setup. And so that way you basically have an API client out of the box. It worked out really well. So really my Stripe API client is 4 functions. And that handles like everything I need for it to do. And that includes like automatically adding our tokens, our API tokens and stuff to requests. So,
oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, that was pretty easy. So what I did was, I think it's called DK Stripe is the namespace. So there's a DK Stripe API client, which actually does the posting and deleting and getting and stuff. And then there's DK Stripe subscriptions and DK Stripe subscription items and DK Stripe customers. And those do what you would expect. So for example, DK Stripe dot subscriptions has a function like get subscription or create subscription or update subscription, or, you know, those are just like individual functions for modifying a piece of Stripe data. And so they're just separated into their namespaces.
And DK Stripe doesn't know anything about your application logic, like what's a company, right, or what's a customer. I mean, it knows what customer is in Stripe's context, but it doesn't really know about your specific, you know, plans or anything like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So okay. DK Stripe, I called it that just because I can't use Stripe because Stripeity Stripe uses it.
Yeah. Right.
So that's like a pretty clear distinction for me. Like, hey, this is something that I did here. And yeah, so it doesn't know anything about the application. It's purely just for working on Stripe, and it's pretty straightforward. And I was, you know, I was able to like write all the docs for it to make it like, it's easy for me to use, which has been nice. So that's great. That works with a Stripe API. And how that ties into my application is I have a couple of contexts. One is companies.subscriptions and the other is stores.subscription items. So companies.subscriptions, so an example of a function there would be companies.subscriptions.create subscription. And so inside that function, it actually calls dkstripe.subscriptions.create subscription, which does the Stripe things. And then only if I get a successful tag tuple like okay and subscription data, that's when I'm actually using the special form with. So I'm saying with okay subscription, then actually update the ID columns on the company that's being acted upon. So our database will only ever change if Stripe returns a successful response to us.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. And so basically these bypass tests are asserting that A, my company.subscription functions make the number of requests they're supposed to, no more, no less. They make their requests to the proper Stripe URLs. That also means including like checking the IDs that are sent. So if a company has a certain Stripe subscription ID, then their request to Stripe's API had better be the right URL. And C, I'm making sure that if Stripe erred, that my database didn't change. And so most of these functions in my context for handling my internal stuff, most of the tests have really just 3 tests, or most of the functions have 3 tests apiece. Checking, like I said, checking that the right API endpoints are hit. And like out of the box, like writing tests for a simple get me a subscription sounds like overkill, right? Like, why would you need to test that? But as we go, checking the case where, okay, someone's wanting to cancel a subscription or cancel a subscription item, what do we need to test for that? We need to test that, you know, if the quantity was 1, we actually need to cancel the subscription altogether. If the quantity was greater than 1, then we need to roll it back. If they're changing from one subscription item plan to the next another subscription item plan. We need to make sure that the appropriate Stripe APIs were called to make that happen. So it gives me a greater sense of security. So like if I know that the proper API responses are being called, and as long as Stripe doesn't blow up on me, like it's going to be okay. And if it does blow up, I'm just going to error early and return whatever Stripe gives me. And if my tests are passing, that makes me feel pretty good because I know that that's the case. And I think like those are the only assurances I can give myself is A, if Stripe says it's okay, my database is going to update. And B, if Stripe says it's not okay, then my database does nothing.
Yeah. And do you have any like scheduled tasks to like sort of detect inconsistencies? You know, like any checks, like, you know, iterate over all your subscriptions and make sure they all exist or something, you know, some kind of syncing like that?
That's not a bad idea. I didn't think about doing anything like that, like a data integrity kind of thing, right?
Yeah, just really, really simple, like once a day or once an hour or something, just do it. And if it's something's weird, just email you. Like,
that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I mean, we're using webhooks. So we had one store they wanted to cancel, but instead of going into like logging into our website and canceling their subscription, they just like submitted a dispute with the bank.
Oh, yeah.
And so the dispute terms were like, you charged somebody after they canceled their subscription. And I was like, no, we didn't. Their subscription's still active. So like, yeah, there's like, I'm using webhooks to say like, if someone, like one of our employees goes in and has to cancel something and they do it from Stripe, that gets synced back to our database and stuff like that. So we have webhooks that already handle like Stripe Connect connections or disconnections and things like that. But yeah, I just extended that to work on this. But I haven't like thought about any sort of automatic or automated data consistency checker. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, we do that with our FreshBooks accounts on Remote Ham Radio. I just have a nightly task of just like, hey, you know, just runs through. And if we missed any webhooks or made any mistakes or whatever, it just sets the proper, you know, finds a user and sets the user ID on it if it didn't sync up for whatever reason, their invoices aren't showing up or something like that. So
that's not a bad idea. And so all of that, like, I think if anyone has any questions about that, let me know. If they have any advice, please let me know, because it was a big project. But the other thing I was mentioning was when I was just kind of like unloading up Paul yesterday, we're talking about, I'm going to keep some things a secret here for future things I can talk about, but pretty exciting stuff happening with DK. But we're talking about some features that we're working on. And one of the things that I consistently have been thinking about over the last few months was, how do I schedule time for maintenance and fixing up what we have? Because DK is moving at a pretty fast pace, I think. Like, we're getting a lot of stuff done. We're adding a lot of stuff. Things are changing. And there's just two people. And the one thing I worry about is, since there's only two of us, and since it's like a full court press all the time, like adding new stuff, new features, things that stores are asking for, when do we have time to clean up the house, so to speak? And up until now, I have been thinking about that in terms of like, okay, so we work by scheduling things. We'll have a call. Paul and I both have a call. I'm in Trello. We drag stuff into Trello. And I'm thinking like, I have to insert a card into that stack that says, I'm going to spend X days on refactoring some feature I want to clean up, right? So that's kind of been my approach. But I realized like, that'll never happen, because that's not something that my teammates really, like the non-technical workers, really know anything about. Or, I mean, they care about it, but they don't care about it in the same sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, even looking at it as a developer, you're like, oh, well, that's obviously the lowest priority thing. Like, mm-hmm. Everything else on this list is going to be more important.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, seem like it when you're looking at it and deciding, what am I going to do next? That's almost never going to be at the top, right?
Yeah. I mean, it should sometimes, but it never really, like from a business standpoint of like, we have X number of customers wanting this thing. It'll help make their lives easier. So that makes it pretty important. You know what I mean? Like that's always going to be number one. And I think in everyone's eyes, I think partly like part of my job as a CTO is kind of like see a little bit farther down the road and seeing like where the code base, if it doesn't get fixed up, or could cause a problem, especially in looking at scheduling features down the road, like knowing if something's janky here and something down the road is going to depend on this, then that means at some point it needs to become not janky, right?
So I just want to make sure we're on the same page here, because there's lots of different things you can do when you refactor.
Yeah.
Right. There's lots of goals you can have in mind. you can refactor because, you know, what you did before was bad.
Sure.
And you just want to make it cleaner. But there's also like the planning for future stuff where you kind of add abstractions, maybe try to anticipate needs,
mm-hmm.
right? Like we talked about, just we're talking about, like you knew at some point you might have a company with multiple store locations, but you just kind of kick that can down the road. So that's one kind of refactor where it's like, okay, well, right now every company has exactly one store. In the future, we'll just, you know, we could just like plan for the future. But I think what you're talking about more is like literally just keep running tests and making sure all the tests are green, but internally just making things more structured. Is it less like for your own sanity? Is it for like to make future changes easier? Like, well, like what's your goal when you're refactoring something besides making sure it's exactly the same?
All of the above, I think. I mean, yeah. Yeah. So when I say refactor, I don't necessarily mean changing code and having the test stay green, but that's not like traditional. Like I'm not looking at like traditional refactoring. I'm thinking more of some of it is, but some of it, like you're saying, is future proofing. Some of it is, where are some performance bottlenecks? Are we having performance issues? Where can that be fixed up?
Sure, sure.
And a lot of, you know, we have a lot of tech debt, I think, from the original MVP that we had, and the business has shifted a lot. So a lot of assumptions that were made that are no longer around anymore kind of still exist, right? So there's a lot of just a lot of cleanup, I guess. It's kind of like, I think the analogy I used was, it's like a construction site, right? So if you're continuously adding additions to a house, at some point you have to clean up the construction site, like rooms you're no longer working on. And that's maybe what I'm looking at, is like a little bit of tidying, a little bit of fixing, a little bit of changing, right? But I think more so it's the idea that we're tending to what we have currently, and instead of solely thinking about what we need.
Have you ever heard of the Winchester Mystery House?
I have.
This is just your analogy of a construction site I thought was great. This is a house that was basically, it's like a mansion. It was just continuously constructed and never actually finished construction while the owner was alive, because she was crazy.
Sure.
And they were just building it. It started in 1884. And is this the one I'm thinking of? Yeah, construction proceeded around the clock until her death in September 1922. And so like your analogy is kind of like, yeah, it's kind of like that, where you build a house and suddenly you've got like stairwells leading to nowhere. And,
yeah,
you know, just like doorways that have no doors in them. Architectural things that make no sense anymore.
That's like a perfect, that is kind of a perfect analogy, the Winchester House, because it is kind of like that. So I asked Paul what he was up to earlier, and he was like spelunking, and that was a perfect term to use, because he, so we have this kind of like cool coupon set up, and it's not like, I can explain more, I think, once we launch it, probably. I mean, I don't think any of our competitors listen to this, or that they would care at any rate, but so we're working on this coupon stuff, and some of it's like auto-generated. So based off of a user's actions, the store owners can say, if a user does this, then auto generate a coupon for this much for them. And it can be like 5% off online or 10% off in store, you know, to kind of encourage shopping in store, because that's what we want. But these all are parameters that a store can set on their own, and how the system can automatically generate. So we were working on planning that out. And so he's going through, and I think the checkout and like purchasing system is the oldest and maybe least changed since the MVP started changing a lot, which is kind of scary to say. And there's a lot of things that could be reworked in there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where he was spelunking, was in the money stuff.
That's also the scary code, that like it works. And again, your fear of like inordinately charging people money when they shouldn't be, or too much money or something.
Yeah.
And like that's kind of refactor, where like you need to be like in it, like head first in it the whole time. You can't just like go in and tweak something because it is so complex and old at this point, right? So that's a good candidate, right?
It is a great candidate. And so, and this is kind of what spurred, and you actually said this to me earlier today, you said Refactor Fridays, right?
Yeah.
And so this is kind of a great example. So Paul's going to be working on this thing, and there are a few things I know that need to be cleaned up, because decisions that were made pre either Paul or I don't agree with how those things were implemented, but I just like they technically worked. So I let them be, but they need to be done differently for future change reasons and for, it's fragile, but it's standing. And so I know how to make it not as fragile, make it more secure. I just have to do it, I guess. And so typically, like Paul and I, there's just two of us. So we're always working on different features at the same time. There's always two things happening. And so that's what I kind of feeling insecure about was, okay, there's always two things happening at the same time, two new things. And how am I ever going to have time to tend to what I have, or how is Paul going to have time to do that? And so I think what compounded it was I've been working on this other feature for a month, and granted, like I would get started and then I would lose a couple of days a week to other things like meetings and calls and just stuff, you know? And so I never felt like I get a really like some good steam going on it, but also I felt like I hadn't really shipped anything in a while, and it made me feel very unproductive and sad. And so last Friday I was like, screw it. I'm going to try and knock out 5 Trello cards today. And I did. And I felt amazing at the end of Friday. They're all little things, but they were all like useful because our salespeople have been asking for them, you know?
Sure.
So I think a perfect test case for this Refactor Friday thing is on Friday, try to jump ahead and clean some stuff up for Paul before he gets there. You know, I think that's like the perfect, that's like the whole reason why you'd want to do something like that, right? Because you know something could be better and it needs to be better, and it will affect somebody on your team in a matter of weeks. So why not take a day out of my week and try to tackle that, because it makes him more efficient and it saves him time. So, and that was the other thing I was thinking about was I was treating refactoring and cleanup, and even like if it's not even touching code, if it's like thinking about reorganizing and writing documentation and just kind of things that are internal facing for Paul and I, you know, instead of scheduling those as a feature, why don't I just say like, if someone asks me, how long is this thing going to take? If it's going to take me a month, if I add 5 days to it and there's budget internally to myself, 5 days for refactoring and docs and maintenance, you know, to them, they have a clear idea of when their thing's going to be done. I have plenty of time to work on it, but I also have budgeted myself time for making things better.
Sure. And you don't have to try to justify it by like you said, like making a specific card for it. And then someone asks you like, oh, why are you spending time on this? Like it's done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like any contractor who gives you an invoice for their work. Like they're not going to include line items for stuff like that. For like even just like a plumber or something, right? Like he's gonna just give you line items for labor, and he's gonna give you line items for all the different things he had to, you know, fix, you know, when you drill the hole through a pipe in your wall, which I've done. You know, he's not gonna break it out like, oh, I had to figure out, you know, I had to measure this pipe and I had to figure out how I was best gonna do it. Like, no, he just it's just you know, hours, you know, per hour, whatever. So It's no different than that. It's you don't need to like internally justify it. You don't have to feel like it's wrong. You don't have to feel like you're wasting anybody's time, because like you said, you're just making your lives easier for everyone else down the road and potentially saving time, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's the whole idea. So I think that's a total viable, you know, a viable approach.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know why I hadn't thought about it like that before. When I was talking to Paul, I was like, you know what I did last week? I needed to feel productive. So I made myself feel productive by knocking out these other things. And Scott was like, hey, this is awesome. Thanks. You know, and it made me feel good.
Nice.
And so I was like, I don't know why I don't do this more often. And then he was like, yeah, why don't you just do it every week? And I was like, maybe I will. So yeah. And then I was telling you earlier today and you said Refactor Friday. So maybe that'll be a thing.
I don't remember if that's a thing or something I just came up with. It was an idea I had and then just never really stuck with it, unfortunately. But it seems good on paper, for sure. It'd be interesting to see if you're able to keep up with that pace, with the pace that everything's going at, you know?
I hope so. Again, I'm keeping something secret about DK, but I hope so.
You're holding out on me?
Yes.
I don't even know what you're talking about, so.
Yeah, I haven't told you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Future projects. Good things. But
all good things.
When I think about that, I'm just like, Paul and I are already like, it's all about like, we're trying to grow slow. We don't want to take funding. So that means we don't have a bunch of money for salary for people, right? So that's the, I guess it's about finding a balance there, right? What's the pace? And I guess it's important to note that, like, yeah, we are slammed, but I'm not working nights and weekends. I'm not overworking myself. I'm taking breaks.
Sure.
And trying to do things responsibly that way.
And, like, the bigger the application gets, the more complex, like, kind of by necessity, like, the more complex each new feature is going to be, right? Not only because the application itself is more complex and you got to work it in there, but, like, every new feature you add, like, you've done all the low-hanging fruit,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you've done all the things that are, you know, give you the most bang for your buck. And now it's, like, the differentiating features and the complex features and the stuff that's going to make your application, like, really stand out and be a, like, amazing platform, different from what's out there, or, you know, better or whatever.
Yeah.
That's going to be, it's only going to get, like, harder, right? I don't want to be like a downer.
You're right. It's, and that Paul and I were talking about that as well, and that's why, again, that partially spurred the conversation about, like, writing docs, and because right now we do stuff with Google Docs and that's fine. It doesn't seem like a whole lot of the rest of the team uses that. They use, like, the support docs that we write for customers, but they don't really look at the nitty-gritty, like, RFCs and stuff that Paul and I put together. I even thought about, like, taking half a day on a Friday and working on a static site generator. So if we change a markdown file or change a wiki or whatever, we actually have, like, an internal searchable site for that. And again, I can use Google Docs for that, but it's, I don't know. It would be cool to have something like that, but I don't know that we need it now. But yeah, so I think that's what's, like, spurring that feeling of, like, I have to do something about it. And so one day a week seems totally fine because I'm still going to get my other stuff done. It just feels like I will be more responsible, I think. That's maybe what it makes me feel, is I'm being more responsible over this thing that I'm trying to steward.
I think it'll make you happier in the long run too. You know, like, when you look at, I don't know if Google still does this. I remember this used to be a thing, like 20% time,
mm-hmm.
where you're allowed to spend 20% of your time, like, working on pet projects, basically. And generally, like, they have to lead to something that benefits the company as a whole. So this is kind of, you can look at it like that. Like, this is your 20% time. Like, you're not, like, going really out in the weeds, but you're doing something that you personally need to do for that's gonna benefit everything. I don't know. It sounds good. I really hope you can just, like, you don't get, like, the thing I could see happening is you get really discouraged, not discouraged, but, like, you don't want to be too hard on yourself. Like, oh, I should be working on something else. Like, you gotta do the plan. You gotta stick with it for it to work. Otherwise it's just going to slip away from you.
Yeah. I think it's important to not bite off more than you can chew for something like that. I think that, like, the Fridays will have to be small focused things, like small incremental changes, and not like I'm starting a giant project and only committing to that brand. Like, I start a new branch and only commit to it once a week, because that'll be a nightmare. That'd be a nightmare.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. Yeah. Getting it done and actually, yeah, quote unquote shipping it. Yeah. That's going to be key for that. You need those little nuggets of success there. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's gotta be small, like, small incremental changes here and there. But I think, honestly, like, that's the only way to sustainably do it. I think that big refactoring projects are difficult and they have to be their own thing if you're doing that. But for what I want to do, it's small surgical attacks on things that need to be cut out or fixed up or stitched differently and organized. So yeah, hopefully maybe I can make a big fat counter website. Did Sean Refactor Friday this week or something.com.
Put it in your B-Think.
Yeah.
Email you on Friday mornings.
I already do have a bunch of B-Thinks for different things, DK-wise. Like, one of our salespeople sends out an email to our stores with things we've been working on. So every Thursday I get an email, every Thursday afternoon B-Think emails me and says, hey, ask Scott if he needs anything from you. So I just send a message. Hey, do you need anything from me for that? it's perfect for stuff like that. But yeah, I'll have to put that in there.
And the nice thing about, like, these little targeted improvements, especially, like, you can look at a performance improvement where you actually have, like, numbers, like, before and after. We could do, you know, this request took this much time, or had this many requests per second, or however you want to metric it, right? Like,
yeah.
Initially our pages took 1.5 seconds to load, and I did these performance metrics, and now, you know, the page is loads half the time, and, you know, it's going to increase, our customers are going to stay longer, yada yada, right? Like, you could be like, oh yeah, while I was looking at this other thing, I also made this thing twice as fast, right? Like, that's something you can actually, like, even report on to other people, like, hey, just so you know, like, this is a thing that I did and it's better, right?
Oh yeah.
Performance improvements are really good candidates for those kinds of things. Oh, there you go. You just sent me your B-Think thing. You know what? I want to see your B-Think setup. You can obviously sanitize it for personal things, but you're the creator, and like I want to see how you use it because I'm genuinely interested.
Let me send you a screenshot right now.
Oh, here it is. Can we put this in the show notes? Probably.
that specific thing. They just want to know when I send my invoices to Design Collective. No, it's just simple stuff that I forget a lot, and an email jogs my memory. But yeah, I'll put. Well, so maybe I'll just do this week because I've been using 20% of my, like, not actually 20% of my personal time, but my 20% personal time in spirit in working on something that I enjoy. I've been wanting to add like notification examples to the homepage. So like, here's things that you can add, or like, you know, if someone's signed in, they can click a button and it adds it to their B-Think list.
There should be at the top, when you go to create a new thing, there should be like a bunch of categories, like home improvement, working on myself, family relationships, and then just like have a bunch of suggested things in there, like based off like areas of improvement, just to give you ideas.
That's a really good idea. And I have a card for that actually already in my B-Think Notion board.
Of course you do.
I'll get around to it at some point, but that is a good idea.
Is B-Think open source? Can I PR that?
It's not, but I could send you a collab invite if you want to see it.
Don't worry about it.
Well, thanks for the encouragement.
No, yeah, I'm really interested to hear. We should follow up with this in a couple weeks and see how it's going and how it's turned out.
Yeah, yeah, I'll definitely keep some notes on it, and we have a graveyard of Trello tasks, so I can actually see who completed what and when and all that stuff. So when Paul and I complete a thing, we actually assign the card to him, so ourselves, and then drag it in there. So I'll actually be able to give you a list of what I did.
You couldn't come up with a better name, a graveyard. It's like a positive thing. You finished it. Not the issue's dead.
Card's dead to me once it's in the completed column.
You should like ascend to like a higher state of being, not like buried 6 feet under.
Maybe so. I just don't ever want to see him again after.
And then it comes back to life, and then it's reincarnated.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry.
So anyway, we love feedback, hearing from people. I love when everyone tweets at me and says, hey, I have to look up his name now. I had people tweet at me and say, hey, I checked out Drummer Stretches. So hopefully those are helping some people out there. We don't need any RSA problems happening.
Nope.
Yeah, we appreciate any people sharing the show, talking about the show, criticizing the show. It's all good as long as you're talking about it. And appreciate all the rates that you guys have thrown on iTunes. That really helps us get exposed to new programmers and new audiences and stuff like that. So I just thanks everybody for being involved.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And if you want to get more involved, you can reach us on Twitter at DNC Show. You can talk to Sean at Sean Washbot and myself. I am Shrockwell. That's SCH Rockwell over on the Twitterverse.
We've got show notes available at dnc.show, and I'll try to put some screenshots of B-Think in there this week. And as usual, there's just links to things that we talk about in the show. So if you're interested in anything that we mentioned, you'll probably find a link to it there.
Yep. Or you can go over to spectrum.chat, where we have the show notes and discussions there, as well as discussions for all kinds of other developer and design related communities. So yeah, come chat with us over there.
And if you're looking for a job, Spec's got you covered, because they have a fancy job board over at spec.fm/jobs. So if you're looking for a new gig or interested to see what's out there, head on over and check it out. And as always, thanks to Spec for having us. If you are interested in other design and development related podcasts, you should check out some of the shows that are on the network, like Design Details, Fragmented, which is an Android developer podcast. There's Swift Unwrapped. And I should probably check that out, because I've been working with Swift a little bit and it's confounding me. So I should probably take my own advice there. But yes, if you haven't heard of any of the shows on the network, you should check them out.
Definitely. And as always, this episode of Does Not Compute was edited by Mikhail Delport and produced by Sarah Jackson. So thanks, Spec FM, and thanks to you, Sean. And we will see you next week. Talk to you later.
See ya.
Thanks again to Datadog for sponsoring this week's episode. Datadog really is a performance analytics solution that's missing from your application. With their powerful trace filtering, deeply integrated metrics, and a beautiful dashboard, it's now easier than ever to identify, analyze, and resolve performance issues in your application. You can start a free trial today at datadog.com/doesnotcompute, and Datadog will send you a free t-shirt. Again, start your free trial of Datadog today at datadog.com/doesnotcompute.